Hello, everyone, and welcome to Those Forking Fangirls, where we talk all things nerdy book, TV, movie, pop culture, fandoms, and how they integrate into our adult lives. I'm Natasha.
And I'm Christine.
And today, we are going to be counting down to our favorite books that we read in 2024. We've never done this on the podcast. Usually, we just do it on our channels.
Yeah, this is the first time we're doing it on the pod. This is a staple on my YouTube channel, like the top 10 books or the top favorite books of 2020, whatever. I'm not going to be able to make that video this year. So I was like, can we please do a podcast episode?
Yeah.
Because I can't not do the top books of the year. That feels blasphemous. But before we get to our top books of 2024, our new favorites that we highly, highly recommend, we have so much Snap, Crackle, Pop culture news because it's been 2 weeks since we've recorded.
Yeah. Also, there's so many like movies, TV shows we both watched, and we've got a lot.
So much to discuss. We are excited. All right. Well, first off, in Snap, Crackle, Pop culture news, we missed the drop of this news
an hour after
we filmed our last episode. And Verity by Colleen Hoover is being adapted into a film on Amazon. And Anne Hathaway was casted as the lead.
Yes, she was.
Wild.
She's playing Verity.
So if you read Verity, you know that the lead really is a younger woman named Lowen, but she's reading a story written by Verity. And I think Verity will be playing, obviously, when we're watching that story happen, because it's not going to be in her head. It's going to be cinematic.
We're going to see it unfold.
And it's crazy.
This book was meant to be made into a movie. And this is my favorite. I can't wait to see it. This is one I tell everyone to read. And I know it's going to be good. I know that Anne Hathaway can pull off Verity. And she's going to be so
I know.
Good.
I saw some people upset because they're like, Anne Hathaway isn't Verity and she's too old to be Lowen. And I'm like, Anne Hathaway is very talented. What are you talking about? All right. In other news, I saw that The Artful Dodger has been renewed for season 2.
Yeah.
And I don't think either of us has watched that yet, but it is on my to watch list. I know Katie talked a lot about it when we were talking about TV shows once. And then I saw a little GIF on Twitter and I was like, what show is this? And it was The Artful Dodger and I was like, oh my god, that's the show she was talking about. I need to watch it.
I watched the first episode and it's about, I think I talked about it a little bit.
Yeah, we talked about it.
Yeah, so like we follow like a physician doctor who's in Australia, and that's where the Brits just drop off all of their unwanted.
Yeah, it's all of the felons.
Yeah, it's a historical period drama show. It's on Hulu, also on Disney Plus. And I think there's a cute little romance in there that everyone's been teasing.
I know. That was what I saw in the clip. And I was like, oh my god, what is this?
You know, since they took away our Lady Jane, I guess we have to watch another thing.
I'm excited to dive into that whenever I have a second. Another news that I put down right after we recorded last time, that Robert Pattinson has also joined the cast of Christopher Nolan's next movie. So if you remember, Zendaya's in it, Anne Hathaway's in it, Tom Holland, Lupita Nyong'o, Matt Damon, and now Robert Pattinson.
Someone else was just cast too, like another big name, like
in that movie. Kidman.
Yeah, I think like Nicole Kidman or someone. Wait, let me just look it up real quick. Right
I
now.
Hope the women have actual roles in the film and they're not like Florence Pugh in, what was the one that was this year?
Oppenheimer.
Last year?
Charlize Theron.
Okay. Another person.
That's who was just cast. I have some Robert Pattinson news.
Give it to us.
I feel like we keep talking about him. He's been...
He's everywhere right now.
He's booked and busy.
Yes.
That's what he is. And he's playing with everyone. So he is starring in another movie. But this was announced earlier this year or last year with Jennifer Lawrence. It's called Die My Love, and they just released some pictures, and it's just weird, okay? It's just
it seems like a classic Arpex pick. When I read little blurby here.
Well, it's weird that we've got Katniss and Edward Cullen in a movie together.
I'm definitely seeing it, even though it sounds very depressing.
Oh, it sounds super depressing. It's called Die My Love, and it's an adaptation of the 2017 novel by Ariana Horwitz about a new mother in the French countryside who develops postpartum depression and enters a psychosis.
I mean, it's giving, I can't think of any words. It's giving The Lighthouse, except different.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's pictures of them, like, dancing.
Yeah.
That's what was released.
They're kind of, like, floating through ashes, aren't they, or something? It's an interesting shot.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to be a weird movie. It's going to give, like, Mother Meets The Lighthouse. That's what I'm getting from the description.
Both of those movies are wild.
They're wild. They're very striking and thought-provoking and weird.
Yeah. This is very exciting, this headline that just dropped. I'm sure y'all went to the movies at least once in the last 2 weeks because we had some big movies come out. But movie theaters are back, baby. We had the biggest 5-day Thanksgiving weekend opener of all time. It soared past the 2018 of all time.
Oh shit.
It soared past the 2018 record of $315.6 million. And this weekend, Thanksgiving weekend, the United States pulled in $420 million.
Whoa.
People are going back to theaters. This is exciting. Like, we've all been very scared, but Moana 2, Gladiator 2, and Wicked pulled in those big numbers. Moana 2 pulled in $221 million,
which is surprising.
The biggest 5-day weekend opener ever, which is bigger than Mario Brothers.
Mario Brothers was holding that record.
Mario Brothers was holding that record.
What?
Wicked, which did so well its opening weekend, which was bigger than Gladiator 2. Mm-hmm. It now made $262 million so far, and it pulled an $80 million Thanksgiving weekend, which was its second weekend opener.
Yeah.
And then Gladiator made, in a total from the two weekends, $111.2 million.
Did you see that Wicked is the highest grossing musical adaptation in the U.S. of all time?
And they hit that
record in 8 days?
Mm-hmm.
Wild.
Yeah, so it's Wicked crosses the $350 million worldwide mark. And then it's targeted to do $700 million plus a global finish.
We're going to talk about Wicked in like 5 seconds in the movie section, but oh, fuck, it was so good. And, okay, today in Taylor Swift, as this goes live, all right, the Eras Tour is over. Unless she pulls a surprise conspiracy theory show, which is so sad. I cannot. We are going to be probably streaming the show, the last show, live, and I can't imagine how emotional it's going to be. Like, I watched the last show of Vancouver in some clips, and I was crying because Taylor was crying and talking about the show. And I can't believe it's ending. The anthology CD and vinyl just came out, and the book. I went to Target the day after Black Friday and grabbed the book and the CD, but the vinyl was sold out. Also, they're doing this weird thing because I put this on my story and a lot of people responded that the same thing happened to them. They are putting the Taylor Swift book stand in a random ass section of fucking Target. Like, someone saw it in front of the girls' clothes section. It's not near the book. So for me, it was on the first floor where the books are on the second floor and music's on the second floor. And it was like right when you walked in, they just had plopped the Taylor Swift thing. But there's two entrances and the other entrance is near the CDs and the books, so I don't know why they wouldn't plop it there. I ran around that store with my dog. I have the CD in my car. The book is still in the fucking saran wrap because I'm on deadline and I haven't even cracked the seal. But I have seen a couple little pictures of the book online. And a really fun fact that I saw was that that rumba that she's on during the Tortured Poets Department section of the show is operated by a guy in there laying down inside the rumba.
Oh, that's fun.
I know. I was like, that's hilarious, actually, because you always just picture someone with a remote behind the stage, or that it's like automated and it just does the same track. But there's a guy in there.
Metal says, I would kill to be Taylor's Roomba driver.
I know. It's very funny. And yeah, I don't know how the book's selling. I'm sure it's selling really well. I think that, but there was a lot left at the store when I went.
Oh.
And we were expecting it to be sold out, but maybe they just bought a lot. So there's an excess of books.
Okay, a couple things about back to the opening day movie thing.
Yes.
Metal said Moana opening huge makes sense, is in the top 10 streaming movies every week, but I wonder if it will drop because of bad word of mouth. Yeah, I'll talk about it in the movie section. Tamara said the last few years blockbuster films featuring women have either outdone or outmatched male-centered blockbusters.
Yeah, it's so nice
to see.
Yes. Yeah. In other news, we have merch. If you haven't seen it yet, we wore it in our last episodes. We got a t-shirt that's pink and a t-shirt that's purple that has friendship bracelet, those working fangirls on it. And we have a TFF sweatshirt and it's black and it has the logo like Taylor does the TTPD. And the second F is unhinged because the show is a little bit unhinged. We love them. I still have to make a video wearing my sweatshirt because it's been a chaotic time. Yes. But it's on thoseworkingfangirls.com. It's right there. And if you want to support the show in a different way and you don't want to become a patron and be a part of that community, the merch store is a really nice way to support the show and also to get cool merch to wear. Didn't really bring that
Oh my
home.
Gosh, Metal says her Forking Fangirl sweatshirt just came a few Yay! Minutes ago.
Oh my God. Speak of the devil. Not that the sweatshirt is the devil, but like, you know. Oh my gosh. All right. And I have a book out called Attached at the Hip that is like Survivor meets a rom-com, and it is alive and well and happy to be gifted for the holiday for anyone who likes reality shows and books or not books, and you want to get them into books and they like reality shows or they like the beach or they like love or they like laughing. It's by Christine Riccio. I'm an author. Thank you so much for supporting my books. And if you read it and enjoyed it, it's also really helpful if you review it on whatever platform you got it from. So whether that be Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Audible, because that's how they push the book to other readers. It really helps my author career. Thank you so much if you've already done that. It's really, really helpful. Thank you. All right. Yee! Anything else before we move in to what right now?
No.
All right, let's do it. What right now? We watched so many fucking movies.
I have seen all the blockbusters, and I will rank them for you.
I have seen all the Christmas top three Christmas movies on Netflix that I can rank for you.
Yes, I did. I have watched those too. Not every. I didn't finish every single one of them. Okay, for the blockbusters, Wicked number one. If you haven't seen it, you need to experience
talk about it. Wicked.
All right. Should we just talk about Wicked?
Yeah, let's talk about Wicked. Well, can I say that on the way home to New Jersey, I watched The Wizard of Oz again on the plane.
I need to rewatch it. Yeah.
It was so interesting watching that as an adult because I don't think I've watched it in a very long time. It was very well. I kind of got an emotional in the beginning because I was just thinking about how new and wild it must have been to watch all the special effects in 1939 that they were doing. Mm-hmm. And then I got to the end and I was like, is this like weird propaganda about like staying in America and loving America, because at the end of the movie, Glenda is like, so what did you learn? And she's like, I learned that I don't have to go any further than my backyard if I feel like I need to find myself, because whatever I need is already here. There's no place like home.
Oh, and she's like lives in like a very small town, Kansas.
Yes. Is that, I mean, it kind of makes sense because like we're going into, I mean, they came out of World War One, going into World War Two, I guess, maybe. I don't know. But it was an interesting thing to hear as an adult. As a kid, it kind of just was like, yeah, there's no place like home. But it was like, you don't have to go anywhere to find yourself and be happy. We have it all.
I need to rewatch it so I can like see it through a different lens. Caitlin says, as a kid, I took it as be grateful for what you have. But your take makes sense. It's like the home is where the heart is, but
there's the way that it's really like drawn out, like, what did you learn today? She literally says that.
Really?
Yes.
It's a whole book series. Like, I've known about this, but I just never really... there were children's books, right? The Wizard of Oz, the great...
The Wizard of Oz was definitely a book.
The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, yeah.
Yeah, but then I think Wicked was another series that was like a spin-off. Fan fiction. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that definitely has more than one book.
So we both saw Wicked. Natasha saw it on opening night, I think, or no, the weekend. What did you see?
I saw it Sunday.
Sunday. Okay.
Yeah. I was trying to avoid, you guys all know that we're content creators and we get invited to screenings, but all my friends got to see Wicked early and I wasn't invited to an early screening, which is fine. Got to see it early still, I mean, on Sunday. But it was hard because it's like I was trying to stay away from spoilers. Like, I kept seeing people talk about it and I'm like, ugh. Like, I want to experience it for myself. But I saw it on IMAX and I'm so glad we saw it on that big ass screen. And the sound, like, you have to see this movie in the theaters. I truly feel that. Because I know, like, it's going to be great at home, but it's so overwhelming. The music.
It's so good.
It's so good.
I haven't been this moved by a musical in I don't know how long. And the I guess Hamilton. But, like, that's not a movie. The movie adaptation of this musical, I'm sitting there, like, just feeling so full of, like, happiness and excitement and emotion and so enchanted by the world that they've created on screen. They've expanded the play. I honestly believe this film is better than the play. This story is meant to be on film. It's meant to be cinematic. Yeah. So because the world is big and there's only so much you can do with the world on a live stage, because I don't even remember parts of this because of the stage portrayal of it had to be so quick and concise.
Yeah.
And the sets of Wicked are so intricate and beautiful. It felt like the first time you walk into Hogwarts in your head. Mm-hmm. On screen, but like a different version, like a different world that was just as full and fleshed out. Every detail of every set piece was so interesting. Like, I couldn't get over, like, even when they're in the cafeteria and the way that they made the cafeteria trays. Yes. They're so beautiful. It's so interesting and different. And everything was like that. I know I talked about this on my stories, but they're fucking glasses. Like, they're so interesting and beautiful and, like, twisty-turny. And it all ties in with the rest of the world in such a fluid way so that it makes sense and feels absolutely real.
Like, going back to it, you said about how, like, I didn't remember the last half. I forgot about the whole a few plot lines. I'm trying not to, I don't want to spoil anything.
I don't want to spoil the second half because I don't remember a lot of the second half either.
Me either.
And I remember not liking it as much as the first half. So I hope that, like, it's different on film, because I think a lot of it got convoluted maybe because it was on stage and we had to move at a quick pace.
Yes. And, like,
talking about the stage version of it, I mean, it's popular for a reason because it's so good. It's moving. The music is just wonderful. But I've only really liked a few songs. Like, I haven't liked every single song from the stage production, but now I'm listening to every single song in the movie. I've been watching some of the pieces from the stage again, and I'm like, this just, it doesn't even seem as like full and
it's beautiful. Not, it can't be.
Yeah, no, it can't be. And it's so funny, it's that the actual musical, like, on stage is 2 hours and 40 minutes, mm-hmm. which is the length of part one of Wicked. Yeah,
because this is what we're much more invested in the characters because we get to spend much more time with them and relate to them on a much more human, personal level than you get to in a play when you kind of, everything's being thrown at you very quickly. The music is coming at you very quickly. We ease into songs. We have backstory in terms of like their clothing. We can't see the clothes on stage. You're too far away. You can't see the intricacies of their expressions. You can't understand more about them through what they're wearing and where they're standing and the background of just their environment. Mm-hmm. And that's all stuff you can get from one shot on a camera because mm-hmm. you're way closer. You're experiencing it like alongside them instead of watching it from afar.
Yeah. Even when Elphaba comes on screen as an adult and she does her hands are such a big part of the movie. And like when she comes around and she like moves her hair, it's just like, I got chills when I ever saw that. And and then in Defying Gravity at the very end, when there's like a build in the music, it's so overwhelming that you can't help but not cry.
I've been crying just casually listening to that song. It comes on by the end of it. I'm like, there's nothing you say.
I've never really casually cried to the first half of Wicked. I've always cried to For Good because that hurts me in my soul. So I can't even imagine what part two is going to be like for us. But now, like, the music has such a deeper meaning to me because it was just so beautiful and so well done, and it overwhelmed the emotion. It was a feast for your eyes, your ears.
Wait, you've never cried to Defying Gravity? You didn't cry when you saw her sing it on stage?
I don't think so. I was 8 years old.
Oh my god. I always, that's like my pump up song when I need inspiration, and I always cry by the end of it. But this time I was crying the entire movie. I literally, when she walks in wearing that hat, from that point on, I'm just tears all the way through the end of the movie. And then when Defying Gravity starts, I'm just like, I start sobbing.
Yeah.
Everyone can relate to Elphaba. Everyone can relate to that. Mm. And I feel like on stage, it's harder to get a feeling maybe of how much you can relate to it, because again, you don't have every intricacy of her story. You have to listen to the lyrics, and a lot of people don't hear the lyrics upon first listen. It just kind of is music and it goes by, but you see it, you feel it, you're there.
The Oz Dust Ballroom scene
was so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. And if you watch some of the stage production, you're laughing. You're kind of laughing through it, and then you stop, and because it's not as big as a moment as it is in the movie, because we can't.
I don't even remember this moment in the movie.
I
meant in the stage. I don't even remember that moment in the stage production.
No.
You can't feel it the same way. You don't hear everyone go silent the way that you hear it in the film, and everyone like looking and, oh my god, how great were Ariana Grande's friends. I'm sorry, Glenda's friends. They were so funny.
They were so good.
Side commentary the whole time.
Also, I just have to say, it was so nice seeing plus size people exist in this film and dancing and having joyous moments and being the villain and being fun without it being about their bodies. Like, mm-hmm. That was just amazing to see as a plus size woman myself.
The and choreography was out of this world.
Yeah. It like itches something in the back of my brain. I loved it.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking of them doing the obviously loathing, loathing. Dun, dun, dun. I cannot wait to learn that choreography. All I do is see that choreography everywhere I go on TikTok.
And I know.
Like, when will I have a second? I just try to do it, but I don't actually like know it yet. I just know like kind of beats of it. Oh my God.
And Alex talked about how he really loved when they went to the Emerald City, because it's like you're being brought into this place. It felt like
it felt real.
It felt real, and it's like first person point of view as you're looking at everything.
It felt like your first trip to New York City or something.
I need that world to be built at Universal Studios. Like, that's what I want now.
I think they will do that. Mm-hmm. It's also, I mean, I forgot this part from the play, but seeing her sister and knowing how that ends is devastating. Like, every time they interact, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe this. And I just, okay, can we talk about how funny Ariana Grande was as Galinda?
She was Galinda.
She's perfection. I can't get over Popular and the set pieces in that room where she was just like climbing over everything and opening everything. It was so perfect. When she hops
like onto Harry Potter.
What?
Like, it felt like Harry Potter.
It did.
Like,
all it the did. Little bits. Mm-hmm. Yes. And like when she hops onto the chandelier and like puts her legs out and her robe kind of like runs into Elphaba. And when she's climbing outside on balancing on the balcony and she's like, get down. And she just wants to pose and do an arabesque up there.
I love when she's like crawling around on the floor on her back.
Oh, my God. Like, and then when she's like,
Jonathan Bailey.
Oh, perfect.
Love him. I love Caitlin says, I love how fluid Jonathan Bailey was to dancing with the men and women. I'm like, oh my God. Like, we've now watched, well, we watched Jonathan Bailey in Bridgerton. I've started watching him in Fellow Travelers, but like, he is a hetero man in Bridgerton. Like, mm-hmm. I believe that so much. This one, I'm like,
He's a bi man. He is so fucking charming. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. The scene where he meets Elphaba is so charming. The horse. Cheyenne said that the horse is the same horse in Bridgerton. It is. He requested the same horse. Did you hear the story he told?
I did hear. Of course, I heard the story. That little jump he does off the horse is fully him. It's not like a CGI. He like,
oh, everything's hops. People.
No, everything is people.
Like, Cynthia did her stunts falling on that broom. I don't know if you listened to her episode of Armchair, but she talks about how like you have to do it so many times that it's not just like chafing. She has like blisters on her hips and legs that just like took forever to heal because she had to do it so many times consistently, and it was rubbing so consistently in those areas.
She had to wear a corset, wear a harness, sing. And stunt all at the same time.
Did you see that little video of her doing the stunt and singing on the wires? And it's just like insane.
I can't wait for part two. But I know it's also going to kill me. Like, I just know I'm going to be deceased.
Can't stop thinking about it. I'm so proud of all of them. It's directed so beautifully. Like, there hasn't been a musical so well told and directed in ages. I'm thinking like the last musical that I kind of got emotional watching was The Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of like really great numbers in there and storylines that felt moving, but not like this. It wasn't like this. And it wasn't half as big of a production. It wasn't a whole new world. And I feel like they probably tried to do this with like Wonka, but I don't think it happened.
I just think they pick the right people. So many people in the cast and crew care so deeply for this project, and you can, like, they did such a great job marketing it too. And I know everyone says, like, okay, now I understand why Ariana and Cynthia are crying in every interview, because we were crying throughout the whole movie. So I can't imagine going through that experience and not crying about it when it's your time to talk about this project that you're probably just so proud of. And but no, they picked the right people to care and make a film that people were going to resonate with.
Yeah, it's excellent, and I'm so glad. I didn't think I was going to be able to see it, and I was really exhausted from just traveling and stuff, and kind of like sad because I was feeling low about not getting enough work done. And my mom popped in at like 8 and she was like, do you want to go see Wicked now? And I was like, do I ever?
Hey, you're texting me and you're like, I don't know if we're going to go see Wicked. And you're like, wait, we're going.
I know. We hopped in the car. We made the 8:30 show. Oh. It was great. Yeah.
Yeah. I've now seen it twice and I would like to see it maybe like 2 more times in the theater.
Listening to the soundtrack brings me, I'm watching the film because the film,
I know,
was so visceral. It was, every set piece was so beautiful. I watched a half an hour thing about the guy who made the set pieces. Did you watch that?
I've watched everything because I wasn't allowing myself to watch it until after I the movie. Remember when we were like, we're kind of scared of
it? I was scared.
Was it gonna be like too CGI? And I do I feel like what happened is that you have to see this film on the big screen, because if you see it on a small screen, we were watching all the trailers on a small screen, like,
well, yeah, I only watched 2 seconds of one trailer and I turned it off because I didn't want to be spoiled.
Okay, here are my 2 critiques, and they have nothing to do with the plot.
I have a random critique too.
Yeah. I do think Ariana's makeup, she didn't have enough contrast on her face. I do think a little bit, like, the blonde looked beautiful, but she needed a bit more contrast with, like, her cheekbones and maybe, like, a little bit of a darker lip sometimes, because she kind of just all blended together.
I thought that was her look.
And her eyelashes were too, like, that was the most contrasty piece, and they looked fake to me. This is only to do with hair and makeup and costume. My other critique is that I think Jonathan Bailey's outfits were not my favorite. I wanted his pants were too high and his shirt was too tight. So sometimes, like, the shirt did, like, a weird thing in the middle where, like, like ballooned out, so it looked like he had it didn't flatter him. I wish his pants were a little bit, like, shorter, like, and then his shirt was a little bit, like, more loosey-goosey, kind of like a Darcy look.
It was like a Darcy look.
Yeah, I did like his jackets, like when he was in, like, the full jacket, like, I liked that.
My one critique, and I think this is why I thought it was all so much CGI, and I still hated this shot, when we went into the Ozdust and we see the animals on the band for like 2 seconds. I was just like, why do we have this shot? It looks like we entered a cartoon for 5 seconds.
It was giving Star Wars.
It was giving CGI silliness. It was giving, like, that hamster movie that was randomly a Disney movie like 5 years ago. I just don't need that. We don't need that shot. It's so magic in there. Everything else, perfection. All right.
Okay. So, other movies that we've watched.
Other movies. Can we quickly talk about the Netflix Christmas movies?
Yes.
Hot Frosty was Hot the dumbest Frosty. Movie ever.
The guy wasn't even that hot.
Well, this guy plays he's in Schitt's Creek and he's amazing. Yeah. And he's so cute. He plays like the nerdy hot guy, and he's great at it. And I love his character in Schitt's Creek. This was just like the dumbest movie ever. And I had all the faith that if he was in it, it would be fun. But just the concept was the dumbest thing. There's snowmen and there's this woman, and she lives in a small town, and one of the small town townspeople are like, take this scarf. It's how I met my husband one night. And then she puts the scarf on a snowman that's hot, and the snowman comes to life. And that is the movie. He sweats a lot. He learns stuff quickly. And he's a snowman. Comes alive.
He fixes things.
It's so dumb.
He's like, very childish, and they end up like,
it is very childish. What were you saying? They end up.
She falls for him. Even obviously, he's like a child.
I mean, he's not a child because he does learn really quickly, and like I think they were trying to be careful about that. My favorite part of the movie was when Lindsay Lohan came on the TV, and she was like, because it's the girl who plays Gretchen Wiener, and she's like, "Oh my god, I went to high school with that girl." Mean Girls reference.
And he does a whole montage in like different looks, but the scarf is always in on him
because it's keeping him alive, Natasha.
I know.
All right. Then had to watch Mary Gentleman because my favorite, Chad Michael Murray, is the male lead. And Britt Robertson, who did this movie I really like with Dylan O'Brien back in the day called First Time. Have you seen that, Natasha?
No, but I did watch her in the Nicholas Sparks movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Longest Ride.
Okay, highly recommend First Time. That was a really fun Dylan O'Brien movie.
Oh, I've seen that movie.
Yeah. This movie is, they're trying to save her parents' bar, and it's a bar where they have, like, performances, and they decide to do a male revue, which is a male strip dancing, but, like, not completely naked. It's kind of like Magic Mike, but tamer. And they get, like, four small town boys to perform in it, and she's a choreographer who used to be like the equivalent of a Rockette, but she was fired for being old, and so she choreographs them, and Chad Michael Murray is a carpenter, and you know, Chad Michael Murray is really good. He can pull off all of this dialogue in a way where I was like, you know, he's charming as fuck, and it's working.
It is. He was the only part of the movie that I really liked.
He was great, and I, watching it, I was like, I can't believe we met this guy.
I was sitting in my living room with Taya and her boyfriend and Alex, and I was like, I'm like, yeah, my biggest flex is that Chad Michael Murray follows me. And
follows she's like, on Instagram.
And she's like, what? I'm like, yeah, we met him at BEA like back in 2016, and then he followed us
to use us to promote his book.
But then I had like a whole day with him at Barnes and Noble and like interviewed him and all of that stuff.
Well, me too.
Oh yeah, you were there too. I forgot. I remember Abby being there. I was like, why did I take her? I don't remember.
It was like one of the most embarrassing days ever. Did you put it out of your mind because I said the wrong co-author name? I said, this is by Chad Michael Murray and Lauren Graham. And it's Heather Graham. And Heather Graham was in the room. You don't remember this?
No, because it wasn't my embarrassing moment.
But it's so embarrassing. You were right there.
I had a great time with him.
Oh, my God. I made a video about this and I couldn't post it for months. Natasha blocked everything else out. It was incredibly embarrassing. And I had already, like when we first met him, he's like such a flirty person. And I said, like, I loved watching you. I loved your work as the guy from Gilmore Girls. What the fuck? I can't remember anyone's name. Tristan. I loved your work as Tristan in Gilmore Girls. And he like went along with it because we were filming. And then to make a Gilmore Girls mistake in front of him with the book was so awkward. And I realized it like 10 seconds later. I was like, oh my God, Heather Graham. It was the worst. It was the worst. It was like one of the most embarrassing moments ever. And I will never live it down. Anyway, it's worth watching. It's not the best, but it's worth watching.
I didn't finish this movie because
you did it?
Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, well, it's cute. It's not cute, but it's cute. It's cute. It's not great. It's not great. Not terrible. It's cute.
Yeah, I just wanted to watch it for Chad Michael Murray.
Yeah. And it's worth the watch for Chad Michael Murray. But then we have Our Little Secret with Lindsay Lohan, and it's actually good.
It's actually good.
It's actually has great editing, great pacing. It has a funny script. Mm-hmm. They have chemistry.
Kristen Chenoweth is in it.
Kristen Chenoweth is in it. The guy that she's with, though, that has chemistry, and that's like rare in these movies.
You mean Ezra from Pretty Little Liars?
I was wondering where I knew him this whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the guy, the teacher that gets together with Arya, who's like fucking 15.
Familiar. But who is he? But yeah, I was so happy to see Lindsay Lohan doing a movie that was actually fun and cute.
Yeah, they each got progressively better.
Like, yeah. They like started with the worst.
The worst one was the chalet in whatever that was.
What? I didn't even see any of the other ones yet.
Her first one was when they were in that like skiing chalet.
Oh, you mean she's Lindsay like Lohan's. Famous. Oh, yeah. They've got progress. I thought you meant the release of these Christmas movies because they have gotten progressively better too.
Yeah. And then the second one was The Irish Wish.
That was, they were all not great.
The best one so far that she's
the best done. One by far, Our Little Secret. I actually laughed. It was fun. It was cute. Yeah. It was well done.
Gabby said seeing Lindsay Lohan do well is so satisfying. I'm so happy for her. I agree.
What else did you watch?
Okay, like I said, I saw all the blockbusters. So the first one I actually saw was Gladiator 2. We saw that opening night at the IMAX theater. With my brother and our friends. And I recently rewatched Gladiator, the first one, and I was reminded of the fact that I hate that movie, not because it's bad,
it's just but boring.
It's boring, and we were forced to watch it several times when we were
when
children.
Young? Oh.
And I was like, no, I don't want to watch it. But of course, my dad, it was his favorite movie. Mm-hmm. And so we put it on. So I just have this like ick towards it. But I rewatched it as an adult and I'm like, yes, this is good. But it's interesting watching the first Gladiator and the difference between the fight style then versus now, like 20 years later. And how like our stunts and fight training is just so much better now. Like there's just so many like fast cuts, like all of the Gladiator scenes, like they're impressive for then. Now it's just like, okay, I've seen better.
It's so weird saying for then because it feels like it wasn't that long ago.
I guess 20 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
I know. And so we rewatched that, and then we went to Ghost, and you know, there wasn't like a hot young guy that I really liked.
There's only Russell Crowe.
There's only Russell Crowe, and he's always been old in my mind, okay?
He's always been old in my mind, too. He's like Steve. Wow. What is Steve's name with the white hair? What is wrong with me today?
Steve with the white hair? Steve Martin?
Yes. Wait. Yes. Martin.
Yeah.
He's always old. Even when he was 40, he was old.
Exactly. So, okay. Because, like, 40-year-olds now, like, Henry Cavill, Chris Evans, like, they're all 40, and they're fucking hot, okay?
They're hot. You would never
Pedro
know.
Pedro Pascal, 50 years old. That man.
He gives 50.
He's hot. No, I love Pedro. Okay, so that's what. So, when the Gladiator 2, we had Pedro Pascal. That was the main person who was, like, making me want to watch this. And I've recently come to terms with liking Paul Mescal, okay? Because I never liked Normal People. I hated that show. It's the most irritating, unsatisfying show that I think was ever created. I understand why it gets the rewards, whatever. But I don't like that show, okay? But I went into this and I was like, okay, I'm going to watch some hot men fight. And I was rewarded with that. And it was nice. Paul Mescal was very hot in it. I really liked him. I think he was the lead of the movie, but not necessarily. I think Denzel Washington was. But Denzel Washington was Denzel Washington. He didn't change his accent. And then I had a lot of issues with Gladiator, and I don't really, if you, I don't really want to spoil it if people want to watch it, but I think they did a lot of things to, that didn't make a lot of sense. Like they could have made a second, Gladiator without like, they just honed back to Russell Crowe the entire time. They were like, yes, remember Maximus. And then they're like, we have to go down to his grave and pay homage to him, or like, you are so and so of Maximus. Like, we just talked about Russell Crowe like the entire time.
Just, I'm like trying so hard to remember and I don't remember anything.
It's okay. Yeah, Tiffany said, I thought the same. It was kind of sloppy. Denzel stole the show. Tamar says, he's just a happy old man that doesn't give a fuck anymore. It's beautiful about Denzel. Yeah, Gabby says Paul Mescal just doesn't do it for her. And I agree.
He doesn't really do it for me either.
Yeah, but I have to say, I did then go on a Paul Mescal journey through his cinematography or his
filmography.
I actually rewatched Normal People because I wanted to watch him have sex again, okay? So I rewatched Normal People, and I still stand by my original remarks that I think it is the most irritating show that has ever lived, because the two characters are just, they just don't communicate, and it's so frustrating. I then watched his movie with Andrew Scott. It's called All of Us Strangers, and it's a like gay romance, like kind of like fantastical horror, like little horror bit, and it was sad, beautiful. They had really great hot gay sex. Would highly recommend. But also like it's basically about Andrew Scott, and he they live in this, like, he and Paul live in this like apartment complex, and like the only couple like people who are living there, and they meet one night. But then Andrew keeps having, he's a writer, and he's has this weird circumstance where he goes back to his childhood home and everything is the exact same. His parents are alive because they died in a car crash when he was like 8, and they're living at the house as the same age that they were when they passed away. And they're like, oh my gosh, you're here.
How old is this movie?
Like last year.
Oh, okay. It's recent.
And so he catches up with his dead parents, and he's telling them, he's like, oh yeah, I'm gay. And they're like, you're gay? Like, don't you want to get married? And he's like, well, that's not an issue anymore. I can get married. And then they're like, well, what about AIDS? And he's like, that's not an issue either anymore. And
wait, so really, they're in the past?
They're in the past, and they're meeting him at his future self.
Interesting.
It's very interesting. It's very beautiful. I mean, it made me cry because I have dead parents, and I can't even imagine like that experience. But I really liked this film, and I would recommend people watch it.
Where is it?
It's streaming on Hulu.
Cool.
Yeah. And then I watched Moana 2. Mm-hmm. And I would rank Wicked, Moana 2, Gladiator 2. I really liked Moana 2. I thought it was a little bit short. I think it could have been a little bit longer. It was meant to be a TV show at first, but then they decided to do a movie. And Barlow and Bear, which is Emily Bear and Abigail Barlow, who did the Bridgerton soundtrack, did the main songs for this. So I think Lynn was a consultant on it. But he didn't do the music. In my opinion, I really enjoyed it. I had a great time. I had so much fun. The songs that they did, I really loved. And they're kind of getting stuck in my head after like the Wicked songs. But it wasn't, you know, amazing. You know, it was kind of like a Frozen 2, where it's like the first Frozen.
Frozen 2 was great.
Oh, Frozen 2 is great, right?
I think Frozen 2 is amazing, actually.
Do you think it's better than the first Frozen?
I think it's like equal.
Okay.
I sobbed watching Frozen 2.
I mean, I did too.
And laughed hysterically.
Yeah. I think the second Moana does not live up to the first Moana, but it's still, I think, a well-rounded movie. It's still super, I enjoyed it a lot. It was fun. but it wasn't, I don't think, you know, at the very, like, at after we watched Moana, because we watched it together, we were like, oh my gosh, that was so good. Like, we started listening to the music. Like, I don't think it has, like, that impact, unfortunately.
I watched Civil War on the plane back from New Jersey. And I know you watched this, like, a couple months ago, and you're like, it's really depressing. But I was in a mood. You know, you're in a certain mood, and you're like, nothing can affect me right now.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just want to watch it. And it was really good. It's really dark because it takes place in a world where our country has been so drastically divided that California and Texas and Florida have seceded from the Union. And the Western forces, which is California and Texas, have made it to basically the capital to take the
over
country. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're following these journalists who are trying to cover it. And Kristen Dunst is the lead role, and she's a famous photojournalist. And she ends up being a mentor to a young woman who is 23, who wants to be a photojournalist, who comes along for the trip to Washington, D.C. And it's very dangerous and very intense, but it was really good.
Yeah, it was really good. And definitely, like, you had to
be in the right mental space. It kind of has an uplifting ending, a little, but not really. Mm-hmm. It's very dark, but had, like, it ended on a note where it's like, hopefully it'll get better.
Because it's been a holiday weekend, we have been watching a lot of stuff. I started Fellow Travelers, so Jonathan Bailey, obviously, made me want to watch it. And I've been wanting to watch it for a long time, but, like, I finally got the push after Wicked. And it's a, like, you all need to watch this. If you didn't know this, Jonathan Bailey was actually filming Wicked, Fellow Travelers, and Bridgerton at the same time.
I know. I've heard everywhere he is.
So after I did All the Strangers, I was like, okay, what's another gay show I could watch? Because I'm into this. So I watched Fellow Travelers. It actually is kind of, it's sad too, because I was asking my friends, I'm like, does it have to do with, like, the AIDS epidemic? And yes,
it does. Kind of,
a little bit. Yes, it is, like, a big plot point in this, but not like you're finding out. It's just like, so we start with these characters from they're living in the 1940s during McCarthyism, and it's Jonathan Bailey and Matt Bomer. And Jonathan is, like, a new young guy who's, like, entering into the political space. Matt Bomer is in the political space, and they start to have, like, an affair in the 40s. And it's, you watch them as they have to, like, hide their identity, like, McCarthyism, like, they're out to get anyone, you know. This is when, like, they were out to get you know, the liberals and communists and all of that. And then there was literally an executive order for sexual exploits or something, that if you were found, like, having, like, sexual exploits, you were going to be jailed. So, like, yeah, it's kind of scary. Mm-hmm. Watching this all go down, and, like, what people who, like, are queer or in the LGBTQIA community had to go through back then. And so it's flashing back and forth from the 1940s and the two of them to then in the 80s. And
it's the same guys?
It's the same guys. Yeah.
So are they really old? Or are they really young?
Yeah, they're in, like, their 60s and the 80s.
Okay.
Yeah. And just to let you know, I don't know if I want to spoil it, but yeah, but one of them gets AIDS.
Well, I would think so, if that's what's happening here. If that was the main plot point, which is sad.
But yeah, so I watch Phil. I'm watching it right now. It's a little. I can't binge it because it's a lot. So I got to take it like one episode at a time. I also, guys, I am fully caught up on Outlander. I thought I would never say that, but I got hired to do an ad for Outlander, and I was like, well, Alex, looks like we're catching up. Fortunately, I actually was already caught up to season 6 because Alex binged it all, and I was kind of like in the room where it happened. And let me just tell you, if you dropped off when they got to America, you haven't missed much.
That's where I dropped off.
And I caught you
up. Natasha spent half an hour giving me a rundown of every single thing that's happened since on the phone.
I can make a whole video on this, like on TikTok, if you want me to. I can catch you all up if you need me to.
On TikTok? It has to be so short.
I know, you're right. I don't know how I'm going to be able to do it.
There were so many twists to explain backstory for.
And anyways, so I'm filming an ad for Starz for Outlander for the new season, and I have to like basically talk about like plot points, and I'm pretty excited about it. And I thought season 7 was the last season because they kept talking about it. It's not. We still have one more season to go.
That hasn't come out yet?
Yeah, I was confused because they just finished filming 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And then they were started to promote season 7 part 2. So season 7 has 16 episodes. And then season 8 has 10 episodes.
I finished Shrinking. That was my TV. It was so good. I loved it. It's on Apple TV. I'm watching week to week now because season 2 is not over yet. And I love it. It makes me so happy. everyone on that show is so good. It's one of those shows that just gives you all the warm fuzzies. It's got Ted Lasso vibes. It's really, really sweet and lovable. And it's been a nice solace during stressful times. All right. We're going to roll on into the main discussion. But first, I got to take a second and thank everyone out there listening. I hope you're having a great holiday season. And we're so grateful that you're spending some of your holiday season time with us listening to the podcast. If you haven't already, we'd love it if you follow the show for free in your favorite podcast listening app so you never miss an episode, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify. It's free everywhere. And we have a visual show on YouTube, youtube.com/@thoseforkingfangirls, where you could subscribe for free and get the show every week. Also, we have a Patreon because this is a Patreon supported show. We don't really have sponsors. We have viewers and listeners like you who are so kind to support our endeavors to make this show. We couldn't make it without them. If you want to be a part of that community, you can hit up our Patreon. We have a lot of fun perks over there. Our patrons at the $5 level get the show ad-free. They get to come to recordings, be a part of the conversation, and they get our half an hour extra show at the end of every single episode called Fangirl Tea Time, which is super fun. We tell stories about things going on in our lives, and just we get a little bit more personal over there. It's a super fun time, and now there are 100 episodes waiting when you become a patron to listen to of Fangirl Tea Time.
100 episodes.
So many episodes. It is wild. And you can get a free trial at the Team Jacob $5 level if you want to test it out for 7 days before committing. And if you want to commit month to month, you can. But if you commit annually, you get a 16% discount, which is about a month and a half for free, which is very cool. Mm-hmm. And there's 2 other tiers as well. You can check out all of those perks in the description at patreon.com/thoseworkingfangirls. All right, we're back. And it's time for our favorite books of 2024. And so just backstory, these are not our favorite books that came out in 2024. These are our favorite books that we personally
read
in 2024 that made our favorite list. And I'm a stickler on this list. Like if it's not a book that I want to read again, that I consider like one of my favorites, I'm not going to put it on the list, which is why we have an honorable mention section for books that we really enjoyed, but didn't make our favorites. So we'll first start with our honorable mentions of 2024.
I'm still Natasha, moving mine around.
Do you want to start and give us your first honorable mention?
Yes, I'll give my first honorable mention. My first one is Yours Truly by Abby Jimenez. And this didn't come out this year, right? It's just it for the not. Summer.
It came out last year.
Just for the summer came out this year. So I read both of those back to back. And I liked yours truly so much better.
It's one of my favorites. Yeah.
It's one of my favorites. I think the anxiety representation in that is perfect. Is perfect. And honestly, it helped me to, like, I already knew this about Christine, but it helped me to understand you more. And that is just exactly what books should be able to do, is to help you empathize with people who
help me understand me more.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa.
Yes. Oh,
we got some predictions from Laura.
Just saw that.
Well, my first honorable mention is Slow Dance by Rainbow Rowell. I really didn't know what to expect for this book, and I ended up really enjoying it and having a great time, and it was really inspired by the way the story was told through time. I just love how there's no parameters on her. There's so many people who are like, don't write books that take place not in 2024, which doesn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. And I was struggling with, because I'm like plotting a book and I want it to kind of take place in a different year. And reading this, and it takes place in 2006 and it takes place in the early 1990s. I loved that. Mm-hmm. And I found it so refreshing and so grounding to have like these different pop culture set like landmarks to kind of ground the story in these different timelines. And she would just flip back and forth so smoothly and so kind of whimsically. I really loved it. And honorable mention. It's not like favorite forever, but like I really enjoyed it.
I want to read it because I feel like I haven't read a Rainbow Rowell since maybe Attachments.
Yeah, it's a... Wait, you ever read Landline?
No, I never read Landline.
You should read Landline. That one's better. I mean, it's just more like relatable to my life in terms of, like, in your life too. In terms of, it takes place in LA and she's a writer on a show. Yeah. I really love that aspect of it.
I guess right, yeah.
Yeah, but this one's really good too. Landline just like stands out because I love her job. And I was like, I want to do that.
Okay. I only have two here. So Paradise Problems by Christina Loren. I think this is like one of my new favorite Christina Loren books. I really want to reread Unhoneymooners just so I can compare the two. Mm-hmm. The reason why this is not one of my favorites though, is because they harped too much on her body and how perfect it was. And that a little bit gave me the ick. I don't like that. But the romance in this was so good. And it didn't hurt too much. Like when they had to like pull them apart and put them back together again. And there was a lot of good smut in this book. Like I feel like the times that they like, It felt earned. It felt like hot. It felt sexy. I really liked Paradise Problems.
Paradise Problems is my next honorable mention. And I really enjoyed this book. I thought more like I laughed a lot in this book. It's not on my favorites list because it's not as good as Unhoneymooners for me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that just felt more well-rounded in like how invested I was in the relationship. Mm-hmm. And with Paradise Problems, it felt a little lighter, which I love, but I do like a more, well, like circle of emotions. Mm-hmm. And I think Unhoneymooners has all of that, and Paradise Problems has a lot of it. It's really fun and enjoyable, but I just didn't hold it at that realm. Like I have a realm of the Christina Loren books. Like there's three that are up there that are like the best Christina Loren books of all time for me, and that's like The Soulmate Equation, Unhoneymooners, and oh my god, where's the wild, what is the wild one called? I really love that one. Into the Wilder. Thank you, Deborah. Those three are my favorites, but Paradise Problems is like my favorite underneath the favorites.
Okay. Yeah. If you guys don't know, should we give like a little synopsis of Paradise Problems?
I mean, it's basically like
It's like Second Chance a little bit.
Yeah, but no, it's Marriage of Convenience.
Marriage of Convenience, yes.
Yeah, but they never really got to know each other. They got married to stay in the married dorm rooms at school because it was much cheaper. Mm-hmm. And then
they got divorced.
They got divorced, and 5 years later, she's broke and needs to support her father's health situation. And
he never told his parents
they were divorced or fake.
And so now he has to go to his sister's wedding.
He has to stay married for at least 5 years or he doesn't get his inheritance. And he's going to use that inheritance for like some charitable thing. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. So he really needs it. But they can't find out that the marriage is fake. So he has to bring her to the wedding and pretend that they are actually married and have a marriage for 5 years. Because they're not actually divorced. They just like...
She thought they were.
She thought they never signed the papers. Anyway, what a time. It was really fun. They go on this island and like it's kind of like Crazy Rich Asians. The wedding is so out there and very, very wealthy people.
Yep. I really liked it. And she got pink hair too, which I do love. Mm-hmm. Okay, what's your next one?
All right, my last honorable mention is one that I really debated putting on the favorites list, but I had to be like, okay, I don't think I see myself ever rereading this because it's pretty dark. But this is Bright Young Women by Jessica Knoll. And I read this at the very end of last year, so it didn't get to be on my list of books for the year. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. The audiobook was so good. It's like a true crime tale because it's kind of based off of the murders. Oh my God, I cannot remember anyone's name. What was the murderer that Zac Efron played? Ted Bundy. Thank you, Shots. It's based off of the Ted Bundy story, but we're seeing from the point of these sorority girls who get attacked by him, who are victims, and we get to see their stories and how he affected their life instead of his story. Mm-hmm. And this one woman is a lawyer, and she's trying so hard to catch him. And she knows... like obviously the victims because she was the president of the sorority house where they got hit by him and he murdered two of the women. And it's really, really well done. I really enjoyed it and you care for the characters. Like I'm not a big true crime girly and I was immediately sucked in and I love the characters and it's told from a couple of the victims' point of view. It's really good. You can get the audiobook. It's on Spotify. If you have like Spotify Premium, you can listen to it that way. Mm. It's very, very good. And I want to read Jessica Knoll's other books, but I was a little scared to read The Luckiest Girl Alive after I saw the synopsis.
Uh-oh. All her books are traumatizing.
Yeah. I think this is the most relatable to, like, we all know about Ted Bundy, and we don't know about the people that he actually fucked with, which is sad, because it's those people that we should care about, but we're, like, more obsessed with, like, how he killed them. Okay, hit us with your number five read of the year, your favorite number five.
Okay, so I finished up the duology and I read Hellbent by Leigh Bardugo.
It's going to be a trilogy. Bardugo.
What?
It's going to be a trilogy.
It's going to be a trilogy?
Yeah.
Did we talk about this?
We're on a cliffhanger.
We did?
Yeah.
Oh. Why am I... Ninth House. Okay, so the first one's Ninth House, and then the second one is Hellbent. And Christine read this last year, and I was like, oh, yeah, I really need to read it. And I did, and it's so good. And I love... I think I liked Hellbent better than Ninth House.
They're both really good. I don't know, I have to reread Hellbent, but I reread Ninth House right before reading Hellbent, and it was so fucking good again. Excellent.
I just love them. And I want to get into her new one, Familiar. I just need to give myself like time and space to be able to understand the whole, because she just writes so beautifully.
Yeah.
And sometimes
in the mood for that one.
Sometimes, yeah, and this one's like, it's a different culture. It's a different different time period. So sometimes you just need a little bit extra time to be able to get into it.
Yeah. I feel like 9,000 and Hellbent are so accessible because it's our time. It's mm-hmm. college. It's kind of really easy to just dive into that world.
Yeah. And if you didn't know, it's like a dark academia. It's about the secret societies in Yale and how they do magic-y, devilish.
Yeah. Well,
rituals.
Our lead character is brought into the society that is supposed to keep all the other societies
in check.
Yeah. And when there's a murder and the societies are involved, she's the one who has to deal with that shit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And she's got some special things she can do.
She sees dead people.
That's a sixth sense. Yeah, right. And I just love the undercurrent of a romantic thing that's building. It's just great.
It's so good. The will they, won't they in those books.
I love good just building mm-hmm. the will they, won't they. It's that's why I loved X-Files so much, because it just took them the entire eight seasons
Gilmore
for
Girls
them.
Too.
Gilmore, yeah.
All right, at number four is one that might sound silly, but of course I have to put it on here. It's Attached at the Hip by some girl, me. I wrote this book and put it out.
Literally wrote Attached at the Hip by some girl.
I put out Attached at the Hip this year, and it is one of my favorite books. It's my favorite book that I've written. I had the best time, and I love it so much, and I love all the characters so much. And I hope anyone out there who is interested or hasn't read it loves the characters when they read it too. And I just love reality shows so much. I love Survivor so much. And it was just such a joy to read this book. And I did read it again this year. I did the audiobook, and I love that audiobook so much. She did such a good job. I'm so happy that Brittany Presley came in to do the audiobook for Tasha. Besides pronouncing Osprey's name wrong, she said Osprey, but I forgave it. People make mistakes. Nobody told her.
I'm very proud of you. So my next one on the list is what Laura described as a cousin uncle sex quartet book.
Oh gosh. That one.
This was her prediction as my number one.
Credence
by Penelope Douglas. I talked about this a little bit earlier, in September, and this was a big TikTok book, when the TikTok book talk stuff was blowing up. It is a reverse harem novel. This girl goes to live with her step, and you know what, for a weird fucking situation that this is, I highly enjoyed this novel. It was very entertaining to me. And it was hot, and it made a lot of sense in some weird way. And I just, you know what? If you guys like your taboo subjects, you should read this, because it was fun. It was a ride. And I actually enjoyed the plot a little bit.
A little bit?
No, I liked the plot. The plot made sense. It's not just I've now read books where it's just for the smut and all that. This was an interesting kind of take on the whole, I guess you would call it, what is it? Incest.
What do you call it? Incest.
Incest. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I love a good incest step. Twist.
Yeah. Anyways, that's my number four.
All right. Coming in at
Laura, but the cousins and uncle don't have sex with each other. No, they don't. No.
They're not actually related to the people they're having sex with. It's always a step thing, right?
Well, she's the step niece and cousin, but the two brothers definitely have sex with her at the same time.
Oh. It's kind of different. All right. Coming in at number three on the top favorites of 2024, I have one that I just read recently, When the World Tips Over by Jandy Nelson, which was so beautiful. I just tried to talk about it a couple weeks ago. It's a book that's hard to talk about. I feel like when I used to try to describe Daughter of Smoke and Bone, and I was like, it's it's about a family, okay? And each of these family members, they all live in this quirky town that's kind of has these magical qualities, but it's very grounded. You don't really know what's happening with these magical qualities. It's just very, it makes it very whimsical and fun. And there's a little sister named Dizzy, who's 12. There's a brother, Miles, who's in high school. And then a brother, whose name escapes me at the moment, who has graduated high school. And they all have a really hard time, like, relating to each other, and they feel lonely in different ways, and they all have like really weird special abilities. Like the middle brother, it can talk to dogs telepathically.
What?
Yeah. And it's so fun. And he's also gay, and he's not out, and he's trying to figure out how to tell his family, and he has a really adorable love interest, and they all have love interests too that are coming into play, and it's just so beautiful. Like, I say this all the time, Jandy Nelson paints tapestries with her words. It's fucking gorgeous the way that she writes, and she's writing for like four different characters or five different characters, and the mom is voiced by Julia Whelan, the most amazing audiobook narrator of our time. And Dizzy can see colors when people say words. Like, words are different colors. Like, people can see different colors with sound. She sees it with words. It's really, really cool. And her brother's, like, an amazing musician. And, like, stuff happens when he plays his violin. It's so cool. Anyway, and their dad disappeared before Dizzy was born. So that's also a thread. Like, we're trying to figure out what happened to their dad, and there's a curse on their family, and it's, they want to break the curse, and it's beautiful. Highly, highly recommend.
What's like the main plot?
I just told you. They're trying to break the family curse, and the siblings are trying.
Is it like Encanto? Like, this is giving Encanto.
It is. That's what we said last time. It's giving Encanto. We're unraveling their family history through the book, and like, there's this curse between brothers, and not to give anything away, but like, it does have brothers.
Oh, another brothers.
So it's, I love it so much, and I love everything she writes.
Yeah.
All right. What's next on your list?
I've actually never read a Jandy Nelson book, so maybe I need to get that.
Yes. Just do the audiobook.
I will.
Yeah.
When I finish Dark Immortal.
Very different tones.
Yeah. Okay. My next book on my list is Attached at the Hip by Christina Riccio. My best friend.
That's my book.
Obviously, I'm so proud of Christine in this one. And this was, I think this is my favorite one. I don't know. It's like a close. It's like neck and neck with Again But Better. I read this for the first time, like, as its finished product, and because usually in the last like two books I've been like reading her drafts, and this was, I was able to have like a more like distinct relationship with your book,
yeah,
than like trying to help you like through it and edit it and all that. Obviously I was there with her like while she writes it, and because she has to have support in different ways, but I was able to like actually like enjoy it as a reader and not someone who's like trying to give advice. And I enjoyed myself so much in this novel. And every time, like, I think I even told someone about it last night at a party, and I was like, yeah, you need, because your new friend or her new acquaintance, Taylor, read it and she really enjoyed it. And so I got to tell another person about Christine's book.
Wait, she read it?
She already read it. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Did she like it?
She did.
Oh, that's so nice.
I know. And then I told Taylor's other friend about it, and I like told her like the plot, and she's like, oh, that sounds so interesting.
That's so cool.
And it was just a really, and she said that she and her boyfriend are now binging Survivor because of it.
Oh my God. Well, she already told, she knew Survivor. Like, it was, she was like, what's your favorite season? And I was like 20, and she was like, Heroes versus Villains. And I was like, oh, you know your stuff.
And you guys all know the plot lines, but there's just so many fun scenes that just stick into my mind. You know, you can't always like remember the full book, but like, I mean, I do remember the full book, but like, there's just like things that are just now like tattooed on my mind from it. And
which one?
The palm tree scene. Oh, yeah. The coconuts.
Okay, just was curious.
The beach scene, or the washing scene. Even like the good very times. End, like on the couch. I love it. And I hope you like, I literally, if you guys are listening to the show and you haven't read it yet, what are you doing?
Thanks in the description.
Laura, nuts for the coconut scene.
That coconut scene will forever be like, because I was laughing hysterically as I was writing.
Well, and it's like, it's also my favorite thing about watching your journey as an author is like you being able to work through things that are in your head and being able to put them on the page, and other people being able to relate to it in some way. Cause it's mm-hmm. like, we talk about these things all the time in like our conversations, but like when you actually get to put them down on paper for people to read now and later on, that's such a special thing. And like, there's just so many little things that you can relate to in this book. And I love when you go off on like your little tangents when you're just like sitting with the character and she's thinking or, you know, she's having difficulties with situation or something like that. But even, you know, you hear the concept like, yeah, you're tethered to someone who's with a 8 feet of rope. And you don't actually get to like think about all the little things that they have to go through, mm-hmm. and like like having to go to the bathroom, and like that whole section is fun, and you know, even like the female friendships that also develop within the book are really fun.
Yeah. My first thought is always poofing. Laura. Same. No, my first thought was like, oh, the comedy I can do with this. Rope. Well, thank you so much. That was really nice. Shot says I had the honor of being the first in release day signing and was like, huh, when Christine wrote Pounce. Yeah. Wait, were you first in line? Oh my gosh. That's so cool. Wow, we're already at number two. It's a short list because like you can't put everything on your favorites list.
Now, and like we try. Listen, we don't want to read books that we don't like.
Yeah.
So like we have to go, you know, this is a lot of time. So mm-hmm. it is hard to like pick like your favorites.
Yeah. My number two of the year is The Wishing Game by Meg Schaefer. I loved this book so much, and I really didn't know what I was getting into. I just had heard a lot of people talking about how they loved it, and I didn't like listen any further because I didn't want to be spoiled for any of the plot points. And it is so nostalgic. So it's about, and I read it at the end of last year. Again, this one missed my list. And so I don't have like all of the details, but it's about this woman who read this series that really meant so much to her as a child. And she has a young person in her life. I can't remember how they're related. Oh no, she's a teacher. Okay. And the young person is one of her students, but she is fostering her. I can't remember. Okay. But anyway, she also loves the book series. And the author hasn't written a book in like, hasn't put out a book in, I don't know, a certain amount of years, like 10, 15 years. And all this, and they live on this private island. And in the book, the island is like in the fantasy series, and like runaway children go there. So when she was younger, she ran away from her parents because she had some sort of hard childhood, and went to the island and met the author. And they get a lot of kids because the books are about this. So like young kids want to run away to the island when they find out it's real. Mm-hmm. And so this author decides that he's going to write another book and holds this contest to people to win the first copy of the book, like the manuscript, before he puts it out. Mm. And she gets invited to this contest, and there's like five different challenges on this island to win. And there's like five different people who are invited, and they're all people who ran away to his house when they were kids, who are adults now. It's so beautiful. I was like, as someone who, you know, grew up with a series that was like intrinsic to their just shaping them being, as a human being. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's called The Wishing Game by Meg Schaefer. So good. Like the details are so blurry now because I read it so long ago. Yeah. It's beautiful.
You read it at the beginning of the year, right?
I think it was the very end of last year.
Oh, okay.
My number two is Bride by Allie Hazelwood.
Ooh, and
The Knot
heard around the world.
Honestly, this is the book that kind of set me off on my path this year.
Yeah, it was the beginning of the year, right?
Yeah, it was like February, and one of the only books I read this year with my eyes, which I always find, you know, if I've read it with my eyes, and it's got to be good because it kept my attention, since our attention spans are so little right now. This is the first book that was in mainstream media where the Omegaverse was brought into. We follow a vampire princess who gets traded to be a wife of this like werewolf general, and these two societies do not like each other. They're living in like the modern world, but they're in secret, I think. Yeah, I think they're...
I downloaded the sample right before I went on the plane, and I read like the first three pages.
Oh. What did you think?
I mean, it was fine. It was like, I didn't have the attention span at the time, you know, and you just can't like read. I watched movies instead.
Yeah, so it's like a marriage of convenience. They get married, you know, she's in enemy territory, and she can't really be up during the day. Anyways, I really enjoyed it, and I liked how the stakes were pretty high for like a romance novel. And we still had a lot of good like smut scenes that were like well earned too. Definitely felt like an episode of Vampire Diaries in a sense. Like that's the vibe that's what it
sounds
gives.
Like. I want to read it. And so many people loved it. I feel like that's one that I do want to read with my eyeballs. Like I don't particularly like reading smut e-books with my ears.
Neither.
Yeah.
Unless it's like an Emily Henry or Abby Jimenez.
Yeah, that's different. It's different. Emily Henry's like her, we've talked about this, her smutty scenes are like more about like beautiful metaphors.
I read two Emily Henrys this year, and they didn't make my list.
They didn't? Like which ones?
Funny. Well, wait. No, I didn't read Funny Story.
Yeah. Did you even read the other one?
I read the other one.
You read Happy Place?
I read it. Wait. No,
you didn't.
I read Funny Story. I have not read Happy
Place. Okay, you read Funny Story. Yeah, the Ryan Gosling one that I...
Yeah, and it was like...
It wasn't as fun as any of the other ones because the stakes were not high. That's what, for me, I was like, what are the stakes here?
Mm-hmm. And the communication.
Mm. And they were just very normal people. They were
not that you can't write a book with just
no, no.
People.
I just mean like they didn't have very
quirks.
Yeah, they didn't have very intense quirks as people. They were very normal in terms of like basic people. Like she worked at a library and she was normal.
Nicole says I ended up DNFing Funny Story. I was so disappointed.
Oh wow, you were that disappointed. Yeah. I still enjoyed it. I just didn't love it like I love the other ones.
I liked where it started, and then towards the middle I was like, okay, this is where this is headed. Like I wanted more.
Yeah, because there just wasn't enough stakes. Like mm-hmm. it was just, I don't know what's the risk. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
When I was talking about Bride, she goes, sold. What exactly did I just sell you on? Was
Bride.
It the Vampire Diaries?
The Vampire Diaries. All right. We've made it to number one, our favorite books of 2024. And my favorite book, my favorite read of the year was House of Flame and Shadow by Sarah J. Maas. This book was the Infinity War of Sarah J. Maas books. It was constantly something new was happening. The pacing was breakneck and mm-hmm. the character development was beautiful and it was funny and it was romantic and nothing felt like it was over the top and just for shits and giggles. Like we were there, we had a purpose, we were rolling, and there was so much really fascinating backstory being unraveled mm-hmm. and oh, it was nonstop and we never got to the end of our chapter by chapter.
Yeah, we're so sorry, guys. Like, it's just life got crazy.
It's just like it became too much to do an extra show every week, and we're struggling to do this show every week because we need an editor. If you're an editor, or you want to be, and you know how to edit, please email us.
We need help. And I'm going to school next year.
Yeah.
So
we need someone who knows what they're doing because we need the show to be edited well and in a succinct period of time because we usually record on Mondays and it goes live on Fridays. Email us.
But yeah, we never finished our relung. We hopefully will get back to that at some point, but I loved it because we were able to understand the story more, and I loved when I was able to talk about like the big action scenes. I was like, and then they got in the car and then he's like, don't.
No, it was so fun to like really deep dive it because there mm-hmm. is so much going on, and then it's so much fun to like kind of look at it through a lighter lens because we got to like poke fun at our favorite characters and mm-hmm. there's just so much going on in that book. So rehashing it was really fascinating and it really makes it stick in your brain more. And I have like half the book in my brain, like really deeply. And then the other half, I'm like, what happened?
Seems a little wishy-washy.
I know. And like, hopefully eventually we can get back to that. But yeah, Natasha's going to be in school next year. I'm on deadline until March. So
yeah, it was kind of hard because we would obviously record our main show and then it would take us probably like 3 hours to reread and take notes.
Yeah.
At the same 3 to 4 hours to then prep for the second show.
Yeah.
And the second show was only like an hour long, but still it was so long to prep.
It was so in depth. Yeah. That's the thing. The prep when you want to do a good job digging into it. Because if we listen to it fast, we don't have the same commentary. Mm-hmm. Because you miss things. So anyway, hopefully eventually we can get back to 2 shows a week once we have like a team. Mm-hmm. But right now without a team, like one of us was doing it every week and we're also like struggle bussing with the main show. We can't do both.
I also wanted to put House and Flame and Shadow as my number one too because this was a highly anticipated book and it lived up to the anticipation.
Well, there was this big crowd of people that was like, I don't like House of Flame and Shadow. I'm like, well, then you don't like fantasy novels.
It's interesting because it's like, you know, so we've had such a huge influx of new readers for Sarah J. Maas. And then the people who were like, oh, I didn't really like it very much. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, this was just so fun.
It was also so good.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of stories she wove together so perfectly for such an emotional climactic scene at the end was like a feat.
Yeah. And and I've always said Crescent City felt like an Avengers movie. Like, I'll never forget, like, rehashing the entire story to Alex at the very end of the first book.
Crescent
and I
City
was like,
so
and then
good.
This happened, and then this happened.
Well, like, yeah, I did, like, what it, like, I recorded for hours on end talking about it for the book talk.
It earned its spot as number one in our books.
You have a second number one?
You know, I do have a second number one because I didn't know where to put Flame and Shadow, so I just wanted to talk about it with you. But my actual number one, it shares its spot. Okay, it's got one. It's a half. Is Draco Malfoy and the Mortifying Ordeal of Being in Love. And this year, I read so many Dramione fanfics. Like, I felt like I was back in high school, like, just reading them again and again and again. And, like, I always read, like, at least one or two per year, but I think I read four or five. This one I read at the beginning of the year, and it was...
You're on a tear.
Yeah. It was. It still holds to be my favorite. And, like, it is... It's a lot of people's favorite, because it's, like, it's a really fun, like, plot-driven, like a little bit, like, of a fluff romance. And... It's just so well written. It was so long. I remember just complaining about, like, oh my God, this book is so long, but I loved it so much. Like, I was like, I think there's like 7,000 pages in this whole book. And one of our patrons, Miss Elise, bound it for me. And I have it. I'm very excited that I want to,
oh my God,
like,
wait,
read
so
it.
I can borrow it from you in book form?
You can.
That's
you
crazy.
Can. Isn't that cool?
That is cool. I didn't know that was the one she bound.
Yeah. And it was, it's my favorite. And my number one Dramione favorite fanfic is Hunted by Bex Chan, because it's in that similar vein. Like, I love a good Dramione fic. I'll give you the synopsis, where they are like adults, and like we're kind of in like a peaceful time in the Harry Potter wizarding world, but like something's happening where like someone's getting killed. There's like a murder mystery type of ordeal, and one of them has to help the other. So this takes place, like, Draco is an Auror and Hermione is a teacher / like scientist. And she has created something that the dark wizards want to destroy. And now she has to be able to finish her project / experiment. She has to go on all these like kind of like dangerous tasks, and Draco has been tasked to protect her through this. And so he kind of goes along with her on these like little adventures. And it gives like they go to, like, they have to like go steal a like Christ's bone out of this church in Spain.
It's giving the Da Vinci Code.
And it's giving the Da Vinci Code / like the Mummy, and it's so fun, all these little adventures that they go on. And it like all comes up to like this big point at the very end where there's like a battle and all this.
That does sound fun. Wow. Those are our favorites of 2024. We'd love to hear yours in the comments on Instagram or in the Spotify comments or in the YouTube comments. Please share, because we always love new book recommendations, especially favorites. Those are high tier. All right, Natasha, it's your turn to do the Mary Kiss Cliff. Do you have something? Because I didn't write it down.
Alphaba. Linda. And
go.
I'm a witch.
And I'm a witch.
But which is which?
Now here's the sitch.
We were roommates back at school.
Elfie's awkward.
Linda's cool.
I was the other one when I made this video.
Okay, we're going to do Alphaba, Glinda, and Fiero.
Ooh. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm marrying Fiero. I'm in love with Jonathan Bay. Thank you. I am going to kiss Alphaba and probably Cliff Glinda.
Oh my God. gosh.
Sorry.
I don't want to cliff any of them.
Yeah, but that's the whole point of the game.
Okay. Oh, man. I don't know. I'm going to marry Fiero.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to kiss Glinda. I have to cliff Elphaba.
You're gonna cliff Elphaba.
But it's fine. She's got her broom.
Because she can fly.
It's me.
Well, folks, that is our show today. Thank you so much for hanging with us. We really appreciate you being here. Our show is edited by Natasha Polis, Alex Polis, Christine Riccio, and Ricky McBrayer. Our music is by Cole Jenkins with vocals by Heather Traska. Our socials are run by Chloe Laverson. Make sure you're following us on Instagram at Those Forking Fangirls. We're also on TikTok at Those Forking Fangirls. And of course, youtube.com/@ThoseForkingFangirls. And we release shows every Friday. We're off to go record Fangirl Tea Time. We have lots of stuff to catch up on. So very excited for that. That will be available to patrons. Like I said, there is a link to become a patron in the show notes, patreon.com/ThoseForkingFangirls. We'd love for you to become a part of our community over there. Thank you all so much for being here. I'm Christine.
I'm Natasha.
And we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.